Vote time!
Vote time?
Who did you vote for?
All of your business.
Oh, go on, tell us.
Look, I sent on your business, right?
Oh, forget about that. I'm a such a son. I smashed your face.
Yes, it's time for to see all the votes you have been. Yes, the votes you have done with your eyes and your bum. Jungus and the colored green, the North Ocean color sea green, the Westwing or Ann slash a ham, and a panda, some sex winter or action man. Now let's all do a scene.
Okay, I have some follow-up questions following that.
Just a minute. Just a stopping number there.
It's fine.
You at the front there.
Yeah. First of all, thank you for that funny multi-track song that no one asked for.
That's what it says on my gravestone. The man that no one asked for.
The fine tradition of Chris Jarvis. Thank you very much.
Bye to me, Dick Rump.
Second... Yeah. Secondly, the voting methodology referred to in the song, did anyone vote with their bum?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very special Don't Let's Chart. Hello and welcome to part one, yes you heard me right, part one of the Don't Let's Chart Big Vote 2020, as voted for entirely by you, the listeners to this programme. Hello, I'm unvoted for, still on the shelves, Ben Baker.
And I am ballot paper soiled, Phil Cashel.
Prize pig, second place, Ben Baker. But on the off chance you didn't see the vote that we had recently, we asked people to vote rather generic subjects for things like best sandwich, best film, best TV, best toy, best word, etc. like that. And basically what we've ended up is 25 things that really don't belong in a list together.
No, they don't.
So we're going to find our way along in the dark as we go with you. Coming up, we've got some very special guests. We might as well just crack on with number 25, which is...
Bollocks.
I only asked you, sir. No big sense. It's the word. Yeah. It's the word, isn't it?
It is
bollocks.
The word bollocks, yes.
Yes, we did have best word in there. Regular listeners to our Patreon show, Don't Let's Chart Nights, will know we did an A to Z of all the words that came in. It's got
bollocks.
We all like, but I mean, it is a comedy, middle of the road. You can say this at about 9 o'clock on television, style swear word. Yeah. And also, when you say it, you imagine them. And bollocks are inherently funny. You know, they're just rubbish, pink, hairy pancakes, you know.
I don't know how to react to this.
Well, if you're not sure, have a check on yours, see if they make you laugh.
Mine are fine, thank you. I'm not looking at them for the sake of your amusement, Ben. We've covered this off in private previously.
Privates, indeed. Let's move on quickly to 24.
Number 24 is popular film Star Wars.
I don't know if this means Star Wars A New Hope or if it means Star Wars
I'm choosing to believe it does.
Which is fair enough. I don't think I saw Star Wars A New Hope in full till about 93, maybe 94. I was in my teens. I'd seen Spaceballs several times by that point, but not Star Wars. But then again, I don't recall that many people who were into Star Wars.
I think once you were post-Jedi, which was what, 82?
83.
Once you were post that, it was kind of out to a certain extent. Yeah. You know, you could pick up the toys for cheaper. At markets and things, rather than having to pay through the nose for them like you do now. It was on the back burner to an extent. I still thought it was great, but then it was space and sci-fi and stuff, and that was my thing. So I think the original Star Wars is probably my favourite one. I know Empire is technically better.
It's got a simplicity to it.
Yes,
it
has.
It's definitely more of a go-to cheer-up movie.
And it's very much the only Star Wars film that was made as though it was going to be the only Star Wars film. There isn't a single other Star Wars film after that that is not part of a franchise, so it has a different feel to it. I just like that for being its own thing over there.
23,
Good Omens. So this was in the book category rather than in the TV category.
I'm all for. It's one of those things. I think there was always certain people who would always have a book in their pocket.
Yeah.
Invariably, they would be practice books.
Yeah, that's fair.
And Good Omens especially. Like many houses had the Best of the Beautiful South, you know, they also had a battered copy, well read, of Good Omens.
So, but, Pratchett was one of the few authors that we got, like, more than one book voted for.
If we'd have just been going for author, he'd have been top by a long. He'd have been in the top five, I think.
But Good Omens, I saw recently someone had done a textual analysis on it, you know, an automated one, to try and work out, can you tell who wrote which bits of this? And there's like a red line and a blue line on this chart that show, well, this is your Gaiman quotient and this is your Pratchett quotient. And then Neil Gaiman commented on it afterwards and said, you see that bit there where it can't quite decide which of us it is? That's because we bounced that chapter backwards and forwards between us. So it looks like it did actually work, you know, pretty well in terms of working out the writing stuff.
I need to check that out because I've always wondered.
Yeah.
And obviously the TV version came out last year and surprised all by being absolutely bloody brilliant.
Yeah, it was really, really good. Especially the bits that weren't in the book in the first place that were some of my favourite bits from it.
I mean, there's that other one, is it episode 3 that just starts with like half an hour of them through history?
Yeah, which is not in the
constantly
book at all.
Meeting up and stuff. I'd watch that.
Yeah.
That'd be an amazing series.
That would be superb. Even Jack Whitehall couldn't ruin Good Omens, which is...
No, that is true. if you've not read it and you think, oh, Pratchett is too wizards and orcsy or Neil Gaiman too gothy and weird, it's the perfect combination.
It really is.
Also incredibly funny.
Yeah. The radio adaptation was good as well, which had...
With Sarah Fenwick and
Mark Heap. Yeah.
To number 22.
Well, number 22 is, we're back to words again, and this time it's Alan. Alan.
Yeah, I don't know why. Again, like Ian, Alan is a funny word.
It is.
That just people seem to enjoy. And several votes in here, fair play to everyone who went for it. I imagine they were thinking of their own Alan. If you've not been thinking of an Alan through this period... This difficult Alanless period. Here's Lisa and Andrew from Round the Archives, a brilliant podcast. I've been lucky to be a guest on a few times with their top five Alans.
Hello, this is Andrew.
And Lisa.
From Round the Archives, giving you our top
five Alans.
After his runaway success in the Terry and June poll,
yes.
I don't think we'll be forgiven if we don't at least include Alan Cuthbertson,
yes,
or Alan Darling Cuthbertson,
indeed,
as it turns out he's called. Yes. I didn't guess that he was from Australia, for one thing.
No, he's always very, very British.
Yeah. And at number four, it's got to be Alan Cumming Obe.
OBE.
What?
Alan Cumming OBE.
All right, Wikipedia's confusing.
Yes. Yeah.
Best known, of course, for The Air Zone Solution.
Yes. and nicking your book off Warren.
Yeah, he sat next to our friend Warren on the plane and snatched his book out of his hand.
Yes.
And it was the book What I Writted, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
Then Warren lost the book and thought Alan Cumming had pinched it, hadn't he? But he hadn't. He wanted to say he's very good in queers, isn't he?
He is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's absolutely wonderfully over the top as King James in Doctor Who.
Turning to directors now.
Yes.
Number three has to be Alan Waring.
He does.
Now, I think you probably know how much I love his work on Ghostlight.
Yes.
But he scores points generally for having a bit of a Dorset agenda when it comes to filming Doctor Who stuff, doesn't it?
And that's come down here on his holidays.
Yeah, with Greatest Show, Survival, and even the house in Ghostlight being Dorset.
Yes.
But you said you think of him more from Casualty.
I do, I associate him with Casualty more. I don't know why.
Well, I've just looked at the list and he's done a hell of a lot more Casualty than he ever did Doctor Who.
Yes.
And a lot of Emmerdale Farm as well.
Yes, Emmerdale.
It's got a farm in it.
Yes, barely. Yeah.
At number two, it's got to be Alan Bennett.
Yes.
For his vast body of work.
Oh, yes.
I mean, Beyond the Fringe.
Yep.
A Chip in the Sugar. That's one of my favourite things.
Yes.
What's the film we went to see recently?
Well, not that recently. The Lady in the Van.
Yeah.
Talk about the lady that lived on his driveway in a van. For,
based on real life.
Yes, years and years and years and years.
Yeah, but Alan Bennett is a national treasure, isn't he? And he should be preserved in jam.
Okay, what jam?
Damson. Top Alan for me, though, has to be Alan Simpson.
Yes.
Hancock's Half Hour and Steptoe and Son.
Yeah, I mean, what a body of work.
But also got interesting links with lots of other writers due to Associated London scripts.
Mm-hmm.
So Eric Sykes,
yep.
Johnny Spate,
mm-hmm.
and even Terry Nation and Dennis Spooner.
Okay, so Alan Simpson could have written for Doctor Who.
I'd love to have seen what Galton and Simpson would have written for Doctor Who. And you're right, he has got a big face.
He has got a big face. I can see why he grew a beard.
Yeah. Actually, there is one more Alan.
Is there?
I wouldn't mind mentioning, and that's Alan Adale.
Right.
Because there's that brilliant Peter Cook and Dudley Moore song which goes, Alan Adale, Alan Adale, Alan Adale, oh Alan Adale. Oh Alan, oh Alan, Alan, oh Alan, Alan, oh Alan.
No.
Good to hear old Alan Cuthbertson get a mention there.
Yeah, I have cross-referenced as well. The five that they listed are the top five Alans. I have confirmed it. So, you know,
there
good.
You go, with the Alan Council. Yeah,
the Council of Alans have weighed in on this. They have decided to allow ALLANs.
Ooh, controversial. But, you know, in these hard times, some Alans and Alans have to come together.
I'm sure Alan Ketterman will have something to say about that.
Oh, will he have something to say about 21?
21? Probably not. It's otters.
Yes. I love otters. Good. I've always loved otters. They've long been my favourite animal, even though they make a very strange squeaking noise like a balloon, which is being released. But they are. They're just otters is best. I mean, obviously not. They're only 21, but you know.
Otters are great. My key association with otters was the Shooting Stars round where you had to guess what film they were. And it just involved, I think it was Vic, shouting, "Die, you bloody bastard otter," whilst slamming a pan into the ground. It's like, oh, is it Ring of Bright Water?
Thanks, otters. Thotters,
yes. Good work.
Number 20.
Fuck.
Now, normally we bleep that.
Yeah, we can't.
But we can't because you voted for it. The F word is our number 20.
It is.
And so we do discuss on the previous night's episode how it's a good one because it's got the F and the K. So it's the spitting it out and the landing. It's the poison dagger of words. And
And
also, you can put it with a lot of other words.
Yes.
And it works. As we've established, with the best one is probably wit.
Yep, it's a good combo.
I was going to say, you wouldn't find the F word in number 19, except you do
at
the very end of Series 6. But let's go right back to the beginning for number 19.
Number 19 is Community, the TV show, which is actually the best TV show because I say it is.
It was very quickly entered into the pantheon of great sitcoms.
And I think the timing of this vote, the start of lockdown coincided with Community appearing on Netflix and being on the front page and a bunch of people discovering it. So
yeah. If people still haven't discovered Community, may you have some sort of guide that could shepherd them through this world.
I've got a top five of my favourite episodes, but I've done it on hard mode and deliberately excluded any paintball episodes.
Number five.
Series 1, Episode 5, Advanced Criminal Law. So this is one that I've said to people, if you start watching it and you're not quite getting it, at least get as far as this one. And then if you're not in at that point, there's no point in continuing. This is one where Britta gets caught cheating in a test and they have a trial. But the trial takes place at their judge's table, which is for some reason next to the swimming pool. It's nonsense. It's just absolute nonsense all the way through.
Number four,
right. I've skipped all the way to the other end. Season 6, Episode 13, Emotional Consequences of Broadcast Television,
okay.
Which does contain that F word that you talked about and is about the only time that it comes up. I mean, I am a soppy idiot when it comes to this show. Mm. And the Community has basically two endings. There's the end of season three where they didn't think it was coming back, and then there's the end of season six where they knew it wasn't coming back. And both of those are fine capstones to the series, whichever one you want to pick. Yeah. But I've picked this one because it's the actual ending.
Number three.
Season five, episode eight, app development and condiments. I think we can talk about the premise without spoiling this one. The premise of this one is that some app developers are testing a new social rating system where you rate the other people around you on a scale of 1 to 5, and their average score goes up and down, and everyone can see their own score and everyone else's score. Naturally, this causes the entire Greendale Community College campus to descend into madness as people of different ratings are assigned to different jobs and are allowed to wear different clothes, and it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
It's basically their versions of like Logan's Run.
Yeah.
Or those near future kind of dystopias.
Yes.
But you haven't even mentioned what the app's called.
The app is called Meow Meow Beans, which means nothing.
Number two.
Season three, episode four, Remedial Chaos Theory. This is the one. Paintball episodes are the ones that people will have heard of, even if they've not heard the rest of the show. This is like one tier down from that in terms of ones people have heard of.
Mm.
So this is 7 episodes in one, done in 22 minutes, basically. Yeah. So they're all around at someone's house. The pizza delivery guy arrives, and one of the characters throws a dice to decide who should go and get it. And then you play out all of those possible dice rolls and what happens as a result.
And amazingly, yes, it does have big impacts.
It really does.
Including a gun, fire.
Death. Actual death. And creates repercussions that continue throughout the rest of this season.
As Phil alludes to, you start this show kind of like, oh, this is the thing about community college and I'm into it or whatever. And then it just slowly builds the madness around you. And by that point, I think that is the moment where you're like, you're either in, you are a full obsessive or not. And yeah, that is, it's beautiful. And number one, your top community episode of all time is?
Season 2, episode 21, Paradigms of Human Memory. To talk about this one too much is to spoil the central joke. If you're going to watch it, skip ahead like a minute. It's a clip show made up of clips of episodes that they did not make. Which is hilarious, because the central idea of a clip show in American TV is we're running out of money and we still need to fill 22 minutes. Yeah. This must have cost way more than a regular episode.
Yeah.
Because the sets in this that aren't in any other episode.
Yeah. The full... just piling up the chaos.
Yeah, it's everything I like about Community just properly condensed down.
Yeah, I hope that we tried not to do that thing, you know, where some you got what so and so like this happened and this and then this. It's because it's really tiresome. We know it's really tiresome when people do that. But genuinely, as Phil says, try it up to episode 5. If you're not into it, it's not for you. But
yeah,
you're wrong. Right, what is number 18?
Popcorn.
Yeah, this is my fault. I said best pop thing, and I was thinking that could people think a lot of people with a popcorn.
I'm a bit disappointed that popcorn was, you know, one of our best pop things, because that means it beat out Girls Aloud minus the racism, which was my personal favourite from the list.
No, that was an excellent one. But at least Crazy Frog didn't get in, and his lovely blurred penis.
Oh, God. I always forget about the frog penis.
Ding, ding. What do we have at number 17, Phil?
Number 17, Ben, we've got The Beatles. The Beatles.
The Beatles?
The Beatles.
A collection of small-type bugs? What kind of madness is this?
You have not only done this joke already, but you spun an entire quiz out of it, so let's not retread this ground.
Yeah, can we just do that again? That would be great.
No, we can't.
Oh, you know what? I like the Beatles, and they even love the Beatles. But what if we could have a guest on who adores the Beatles? Do you know anyone who might fit that kind of small representation style tube of personage I'm looking for?
What, someone that we know that's a big fan of the Beatles?
Yeah, that's a human way of saying it.
I can't think of anyone.
Ahem.
Sorry, there appears to be a Victorian lady trying to get her attention from the distance.
Excuse me.
Ah, it's Lady Madonna from TV's Beatles. Ladies and gentlemen, from Hark and the forthcoming Head Ballet, which we'll talk about, Paul Abbott, hello.
Good afternoon, Beatles.
I'm not Beatles.
I don't believe the Beatles are listening, Paul. I'm sorry if we've led you to believe that would be the case.
I thought this was finally my moment to, you know, really speak to them directly. Tell them everything I think they should have done with their career.
Paul!
Yes?
What are Beatles?
Well, I've been conducting a near lifelong study of what are Beatles, and I've come to several conclusions. One is Beatles are banned. Beatles are just everything to folks like me. That's my answer for that question anyway. It's a slice you open, it says Beatles through the middle, and it cost me a fortune to have that surgery.
I was going to say, not for the surgery itself, but just for the rights to use the name, I assume.
Yeah. It's actually very cheap.
At one point, you would have had to pay Michael Jackson for that.
to rummage around inside you. Anyway, when did you first hear the Beatles? Is this a childhood thing onwards? Or?
Yeah, it is. They were records in my parents' record collection and a few cassettes. Lovely, thick, plasticky, those very 70s music cassette releases of things. So when I got my first cassette Walkman, for instance, I had access to a 70s cassette edition of Sgt. Pepper, and I literally remember the day I listened to that all the way through and having one of those mind-blown moments.
Did you listen to the Beatles as a kid, Phil?
Not so much. My parents' record collection was mostly 70s and 80s stuff. They did have Beatles records, but they were in a wire shopping basket in the garage that I found later on.
That's where Wilson's government insisted upon that in every home.
But you know, like the Magical Mystery Tour album that has the full storybook thing with it?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
That was in that basket.
See, my parents would constantly say, the most overrated band in the world. My mum likes her 70s, mainly Convicted, acts and stuff. My dad's like, Stones, they're the band. And I'm like, yeah, but I can like both. And indeed, it took me a long time. Beatles, I got into a lot easier. We got the Red and Blue albums because we had a pub and my dad decided we probably should have the Beatles albums for requests when when he was DJing and stuff like that. And I remember those CDs costing £30.99 each.
Yeah.
It's appalling.
Well, the Red and Blue albums are a strange thing because they were the entry point for lots and lots of people, but never for me. In fact, the only time I got the Red and Blue album was recently when my mum, at an auction that she decided to go to, having been hypnotised by Bargain Hunt, had gone to an auction and bought a box of mono Beatles records and gave them to me, which was brilliant because I never had them in mono. I love the stereo mixes with all the voices on one side and the drums and guitars on the other. For a lot of people, that was totally the way into it. And
yet, weirdly, in this chart, with all the votes, the Beatles were not the top voted band of it. In fact, the Pet Shop Boys were, which I love the Pet Shop Boys, but, you know, I'm not quite sure.
They're great, but I don't know. It seems demographically that an earlier band would have won, and it would probably have been the Beatles. But yeah, Pet Shop Boys are brilliant.
The question was phrased best pop thing.
And I suppose, but
I wouldn't say the Beatles epitomise pop as much as the Pet Shop Boys.
No, which is funny because their reputation to a lot of people is, they're just a pop band. And, you know, that was a lot of sneering and dismissiveness of them, particularly in the early part of their career. And yeah, they were a pop band. They totally were a pop band, but that is not a bad thing.
No,
absolutely not.
And I can understand why people get annoyed with them, but those people who are annoyed by them aren't me, who moved to Liverpool because of the Beatles.
Is that really why you moved there, Paul?
Well, when I was looking at universities, I skewed my search towards Liverpool, and it turned out that the place I wanted to go was Liverpool. You know, definitely.
Brilliant. That's fair play. And I'm just saying that I can't imagine next year, when we're allowed to go to pictures again, there'll be a film in which a fella falls off his bike, then goes home and goes, Pet Shop Boys, no one's heard, and just type in Sev EDA, I love you, and Google coming up with nothing. And then Ed Sheeran coming round and saying, well, do you want to play all your new songs that you definitely wrote, you know, and Hamish Patel going up on stage and singing Paninaro.
Mournfully doing a ballad version of West End Girls or whatever.
I'm basically saying yesterday's f***ing shit.
Who would play the elderly Neil Tennant in that?
Colin Firth.
No, just get a what do you call it? Get Robert Carlyle again in, but with a different wig on top of his John Lennon neck.
Yeah, I'd watch that.
Yeah, I'd watch that. So, Paul, you as I sort of alluded to earlier on, you've got a new podcast coming out soon.
I have, yeah.
Will the Beatles kind of feature in that world?
The Beatles are very likely to feature in that world. In fact, they sort of have already. So the new podcast is called The Head Ballet, and it's all about novelty songs, but novelty songs is a pretty broad term in how we're using it on that, where I'm interviewing people who are bringing along their picks for something. Someone not a million miles away from this particular Skype call might well be featuring on that podcast. Mysterious. Yeah, and I would like to assure everyone, though, it's not just going to be me going, Beatles, please.
I mean, I'd listen to that.
Well, yeah.
I might just loop that, cut it out, and loop it out.
I'd listen to. I do already listen to a lot of podcasts that are essentially just Beatles, please.
Where can they find
Beatles?
Beatles, please, your new podcast.
Just go to Twitter and type Beatles, please, into it and see what happens.
Hang on. I'm doing it now. Oh no, I've just tweeted it.
It said Balls Day all over again. Beatles, please, there. Paul, where can we find you?
Everyone can come to @HeadBalletPod and search through there to find me and everything else that I'm doing. That's where you should come now.
Brilliant. Paul, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Paul.
Merry Beatles.
Beatles, please. Paul covered us rather nicely there for the Beatles.
He did.
It's quite nice, actually, for what comes in at 16. There's a little bit of overlap at the end of the 60s as the Beatles goes out and what starts at number 16 comes in.
At number 16, it's Monty Python's Flying Circus, or if you want to pronounce it properly, Monty Python's Flying Circus.
Yes, indeed. And it is one of the eternal you either get it or you don't programmes. And, you know, I am of an age and of a standing now where it's like, if you don't get it, that's fine. It's not a compulsory thing at all. But I've talked probably on these podcasts many a times. I first saw Python in November 1989. For the 20th anniversary, repeats on BBC Two. And we literally, Graham Chapman had just died.
Mm.
And I remember asking my parents, will I like this? And they were like, I don't know. Possibly. And indeed, it warped me quite considerably.
Yeah, I think ish. A lot of people had that experience. I know that me and all the people I was friends with at the time that this was on were ridiculously into Python.
I've been looking back, because basically I decided to pick a top 5 Python episodes and then immediately regretted it, as it's nearly impossible.
Mm. There are absolutely bits that don't work, that's fair.
Absolutely, and there are bits that have stopped working since they were recorded first.
I mean,
but
I remember even at the time that I first saw them, the interminably long Invasion of the Blancmanges, or I can't remember what the name of the episode was, but I'm assuming
you're
that's
no fun anymore.
Yeah, that's not going to be in your top 5 because it was...
No, that is my least favourite.
Okay, number 5.
Number 5, Blood, Devastation, Death, War and Horror, Series 3. Episode 4, aired November 9th, 1972. This is the one that starts with a man who speaks in anagrams, which is a near perfect sketch.
Right.
Okay. Very Eric Idle.
And I believe you're working on an anagram version of Shakespeare.
Say, tart secret. Tar thee, Nemot, I'm roking on The Mating of the Wersh.
The Mating of the Wersh, by William Shakespeare?
Nay, by Manny Wee Rape Sheik.
Ah. And what else?
2 Nettle Meg of Verona, 12th Thing, The Chamrent of Venice.
Have you done Hamlet?
Thamel. Biot or Botniot, oh, Taff is the next queen.
We've also got the Merchant Banker sketch in there when a charity donation man comes in. And the Merchant Banker can't understand a charitable donation. Although he does have the great line, at Slater Nazi, we are quite keen to get into orphans.
Yeah, but you know, it's a good job in the 40 years since then, things have changed in the world of capitalism.
Yeah, the weirdest thing about that is that they actually got a repeat part of 60 years of the BBC, 25 past 6 on BBC One.
Wow.
Which, it's not a very rude episode, but still Python at 6:30, you just couldn't imagine it now.
Gonna say Python does not belong in that time slot anyway.
If you're gonna split hairs, I'm gonna piss off.
Number 4.
Full Frontal Nudity, Series 1, Episode 8, aired December 7th, 1969.
Right.
Starts with a soldier trying to leave the army because it's dangerous. And then the Vacotti brothers, gangsters, try to offer protection to the army.
Right.
But it's also the first one where the colonel ends sketches because they're silly.
Yes.
After that, you've got the art critic, which has got one of the phrases I've used too much, which is, I'd like to talk to you tonight about the place of the nude in my bed. I mean, in the history of my bed. I mean, of art. there's buying a bed in there, which right. is the, you can only say certain words or you set the salespeople off.
Right.
It's like Hell's Grannies, which is in there. But the reason it will probably annoy some Python fans is it is the one with the parrot. It's a good sketch.
So the places that I mostly, the stuff that I watched over and over again, because it was, you know, I'd recorded it, was Live at the Hollywood Bowl and Live at Drury Lane. So the parrot sketch, I remember it in that version rather than the original version.
What is that? Do you want to come back to my place?
Yes, that's it.
That's that one, isn't it?
Let's go for number 3 then, shall we?
3's Deja Vu, Series 2, Episode 3, September 29th, 1970.
Amusingly, I remember this one very well.
3's Deja Vu, Series 2, Episode 3, September 29th. Well, yeah, this is one which... So I got a box set of Python from my uncle, because I'd been borrowing them off him for ages, right. One at a time, and eventually just gave it to me. But this one's got... They're hijacking the plane to Luton, that's going to Cuba, and... Ewan McTeagle's in there. 3's Deja Vu, Series 2, Episode 3. All the psychiatrists and milkman stuff in there.
Yes.
It's the first appearance of the bishop who's rehearsing. Do you remember what his line is?
Oh, Mr. Something or other, your legs are so swollen.
Mr. Belpit, your legs are so swollen. Yes. Yeah. And it ends with Deja Vu, which is... It was actually supposed to end with the election night sketch, which is a couple of episodes on. Right. But it was overrunning, so they decided to do this thing with the Deja Vu sketch, where basically 3's Deja Vu, Series 2, Episode 3. He starts hosting it, and then it's repeating.
It's restarting.
And repeating, and repeating, and it freaks me out. And repeating, and it, so they have a lot of fun with that last sort of 8 minutes or so, recutting it and back and forth, and repeating.
They do keep recutting it, but they also do keep having Palin's character just realising that something is wrong and getting increased. That's what makes it occasionally, that's what it, when it freaks you out. Because they're not just repeating the same footage, because he knows what's going on. He's going, Let's go for number 3 then, shall we?
3's Deja Vu, Series 2, Episode 3, September 29th, 1970.
Amusingly, I remember this one very well.
Yeah.
Let's move on to number 2.
Number 2, Light Entertainment War, Series 4, Episode 3, first aired 14th of November, 1974.
Now, Ben, everyone knows that Series 4 is after John Cleese went and therefore it was bad. Everyone knows that, right? That's a thing. That's a thing.
Apparently so. It's not true.
No.
Series 4, it's very, very inconsistent, I'll give you that. It depends on your take, but, I mean, there's Mr. Neutron and Hamlet in there, and they're a bit dull.
Yeah.
But there's also Michael Ellis, which would have nearly made it into this. And I really like the last episode with the most awful family in Britain.
Okay.
And then there's this, which is, it's a sort of a mix of sketches about World War II and sketches about how TV works. And so it starts with like this awful up your pavement sketch about tramps, and then it goes into RAF banter. You know, Bally Jerry, Pregnant Kite, Andrew How's Your Father, Harry Blighter, Dickie Birdied, all that stuff. There's another great wordy one as well later on. Woody and Tinny Words is from there.
Fair enough.
It's interesting. But the key scene in the middle, not only is there a court-martial sketch which ends with saying Cole Porter. Cole Porter? No, not that one. The one who wrote Anything Goes. Not that Anything Goes. That Anything Goes goes. Anything goes in.
Anything goes out. Fish, bananas, old pajamas, mutton, beef and trout.
And then that spills into this TV planners meeting where they're just these men are waiting for the bar to open, trying to come up, and they're talking about, you know, showing motorway footage and stuff and retitling repeats, and it's got stuff like
Dad's Mary.
Mm, good, good, good.
Up Your Mother Next Door.
Oh. Even better.
Doctor at B.
What? Someone's knocking at the door.
Mm, quite like it. Bit long, though, I think.
Far too long. Doctor at Cake! I'm married! 3 rabbit jelly molds!
It's just an episode full of great ideas. And I'm a huge, huge fan of it.
Which is fair enough, but as we've established, Series 4 doesn't count. So let's move on to your top best Python episode ever.
Yeah, very tough. Again, I could have had anything. It would have always been a Series 2 one, but I decided to go for the Buzz Aldrin Show, Series 2, Episode 4, from October 20th, 1970. There's the architect sketch where they're building a block of flats where Cleese has designed, you know, one where the blood sluices down. There's no mess.
That's the one with satire flashing on the screen in big letters, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah.
And Idols catches fire, the model catches fire. Stuff, but he gets in because he's a mason. There's an insurance sketch, which again is the dodgy Vicotti brother that Michael Palin plays. And to get revenge for him is the Bishop!
Superb, yes.
It's like a parody of those 1960s adventure serials, kind of ITC.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like ITC feeling, yeah.
Where they're just rushing around trying to stop Vickers being killed. And that's like halfway into it. And then you've got like the censorship bit about Semprini. It ends with a chemist sketch where a toilet requisite and Eric Idle wanting fish aftershaves and stuff. It's just, it's a perfect half an hour of comedy. And again, if you don't get it, that's fair enough. We probably should have said at the start, just skip this 10 minutes. And as for number 15, well, you'll just have to wait. But in the meantime, you can tell everyone about this one at Don't Let's Shout on Twitter. And if you like it and you want more, we are doing a very special series on Patreon throughout summer. They won't be going on the regular feed for people because we've got some amazing supporters on there who've really stuck with us through these hard times. And we want to thank them. So get on there if you want to, patreon.com/Don't Let's Chat. Until next time, I have been Bollocks.
And I have been an omen.
Good omens.
Oh. I tricked you.
Goodbye.
Let's go for number 3 then, shall we?
3's Deja Vu, Series 2, Episode 3, September 29th, 1970.
Amusingly, I remember this one very well. Let's go for number 3 then, shall we?
3's Deja Vu, Series 2, Episode 3.
Full time. This is very familiar. I haven't been here before.
Oh God!
Oh no!
Oh no!
Oh God!